Okay, reading from the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. Let's see. Volume 1, text 6. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay. Text 1-3. Shri Parikshit Uvacha Tatshrutvaya Mahaprema Rasaveshena Yantrita Mahavishnu Priyavina Hastau So Vismitakila Sadadvarmiti Vasa Yastanta Puravartmana Prabhu Prasada Deshanta Praveshacharja Vahina Purvabhyasad Ivabhyasam Prasadasya Gatomi Putavishtu Mahomada Priyatascha Yasetara. See, Parikshit said, Noble Mother, after hearing Ugrasena's advice, Narada, the dear devotee of Lord Mahavishnu, became absorbed in the taste of exalted love of God, which seized him in its grip. Forgetting everything else, he started off, Veena in hand. Having spent much time before in Dwarka, Narada automatically took the familiar roads to the center of the city, amazing roads that led to the neighborhood of the Lord's palaces, and came to a palace of Krishna's that he knew how to reach from earlier visits. Under the spell of intense transcendental agitation, Narada seemed like an ordinary person haunted by a ghost. Om Jnana Timarandasya Gyananjana Salakya Taksurunmulitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vairagya Yug Bhakti Risham Payatnai Apayama Manabipsamandam Kapamburiya Paraduka Duki Sanatanatam Prabhumasriyami Mancha Kapa Tanubhyascha Kripa Shindu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasade Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, greetings from New Jersey. I haven't done this in a while. Maybe I have. I don't remember. But just sharing some of the things I've been doing, it's really been nice. Some of you remember Narottam, my student Narottam. He went back to school and he's at Hunter College. And he's taking a course in Eastern religions, and because he has so much experience in Indian thought, my God, maybe having been a devotee since he's 16, in his 30s now, he had a lot to say in his class, and he's very intelligent. He's a good student, 4.0 average only. Anyway, so somehow he asked the teacher if his she would like his guru to come to the class and speak, and she was really into it. And they were studying Shankaracharya in the class. And the teacher, who is a, you know, PhD in, I don't know, probably Indology, is a Sanskritist, or a very nice lady. She reminded me of some, you know, Rabindra Sarup's disciple, Sharanagati. Just like, an elderly, pious mode of goodness lady. Maybe not from the religious side, I don't know. But definitely very mode of goodness, very, very sweet, humble person. And when I came into the class, she said, we're studying Shankaracharya. Maybe you could speak about that and refute it from your own side. Shankaracharya, of course, is the fountainhead of impersonalism in one sense. And it's really nice. I like giving these classes in the university. And I spoke about my tradition, and therefore it came down to that. And it was great. I mean, I got a double round of applause. The students appreciated it. And staying in contact with that professor, that's nice. But it's interesting, the professor told me that, you know, Narottam told me that the professor was reading to them from Shankaracharya. She said, "Does this make sense to you?" And I think one point that I bring up that kind of shocks the teachers and the students, but is that the of the six darshans of Indian philosophy, by far the majority, I believe, all except Advaita Vedanta, which is one part of one school, accepts that there's a plurality of souls. Where Advaita Vedanta believes it's just one undifferentiated being. And, you know, that resonates with people. They don't think that I am you and you are him and whatever it is. It resonates in ways. But that was that. And then yesterday, I went to the 12-hour kirtan in the Bhakti Center and basically sat there for most of the 12 hours. And I was surprised how easy it was. Basically, every half hour, an hour, there's a new kirtan band. And Achyuta, Ananta, Gauravani, wow, some of the kirtans that they were phenomenal. Really phenomenal. And the way they did it, it was great. And and then interspersed with occasionally other devotees leading during the day. And they had three or four outside bands, kirtan bands come in, which were kind of funky nice. you know, definitely not the standard. And I guess they're just told that it's a Krishna temple and it's Krishna bhajan. So I don't know. I guess they made up their own mantras with Krishna's names, but interesting, some really good musicians too, and it was just really nice. And the thing that I like, I was sitting there the whole time. I mean, there were people coming in and out all day. And I looked around, and, you know, it didn't look like a devotee audience necessarily. I mean, well, if there were, there's people, a lot of people that are just coming or something. But just people coming all day. And, you know, I mean, a lot of people stayed there the whole, many people stayed there the whole time. But I noticed new people just, so many, every hour just coming in to the kirtan, some staying. And it was great. Lakshmi Srinu was there, and at the end, everyone was dancing. And it's interesting, too, that the first people to get up to dance, for some reason or other, are the people that are new. Practically, at one time, it's all the new people were dancing. So it's really nice. I mean, and it's such a great place. And there was prasad three times a day, so people could go up. And so it was great. I mean, that's really nice. And of course, I met so many people I know. I mean, I just went out a few times, but whenever I went out, so many nice people. So now let's get back to our, there's one on May 1st somehow, again, which I will attend. So now we're up to Priyatama. The previous was Priya, Ugrasena, the residents of Hastinapur. Their beloved, this is Priyatama. This is the most beloved. The most beloved is going to, it's going to first describe Uddhava, who is the topmost devotee outside of Vrindavan. This is the intimacy. Outside of Vrindavan, that absolute reality, outside of home, appears in some form of majesty or Aishwarya or opulence. And therefore, the flavor of love is tinged with some distance of dealing with a superior and an element of loving fear. Out of, like, for example, one may have a father, and he's a very, very respectable, dignified person. And you don't want to disappoint that person. So these elements of distance and fear in the science of rasa or love, they weaken that pure love, so to speak. And we know that in the Srimad Bhagavatamrita, that Narada is searching for the Priyatama, the topmost love, although after this chapter there's Purna, which is perfectional, the complete love. So Ugrasena was glorified for his intimacy with Krishna. But Ugrasena pointed to Narada. Most of you have been on the classes for many, many weeks or years even, or at least this subject, and you know that's just a sign of natural humility and self-satisfaction in devotion, that one does not like to be praised or put in the center, and the natural humble and devotional response is to deflect that praise and those actions which put one in the center, unless one has to take the center as for their service in leadership, whether it's family or country or whatever it is. And if one has to take that center of leadership, one does it only in the mood of service. So after Narada hears, because he points to Uddhava for so many reasons, but mostly his intimacy with Krishna, because he's the personal assistant. It's as close as you can get with Krishna as the king, until Krishna sheds the throne. There's a limit to the intimacy one could share with him. But Uddhava has went to the end of that, as close as he could to the end of that limit. And then Narada, again, it can't be repeated enough, he, you know, devotional service is enthusiasm. Therefore, it's so important for superiors, whether they're parents or heads of temples or gurus, to create an atmosphere of enthusiasm. Of course, there's always parameters that in one sense have to be forced in any society. There's limits to what you can do. But as much as possible, bhakti has to be bhakti is voluntary. It is enthusiasm. So someone who's very advanced, he's very enthusiastic. That's the symptom. The first said Goswami Astakam. Krishna Kirtana Gana Nartana Pano Prema Mritam Bhavidhi Dira Dira Janapriyo Priyakaro Nirmatsaro Pujito Sri Chaitanya Kripa Baro Bhuvi Bhago Paravahantareko Vande Rupa Sanatana Raghu Yago Sri Jiva Gopala Krishna Krishna Kirtana Ganana. The six Goswamis, the first thing that's described is Ut Kirtana. Ut means enthusiastic. Ut is also refers, I think I think it means stretching. It gives the image of a bird who stretches its neck for food. It has an eagerness. So that type of eagerness, and what is his eagerness for? It's the association of devotees, which is so instructive because that's the foundation of our devotional service. The enthusiasm for associating with those advanced in spiritual life and to hear from them. So after hearing the glory, he's enthusiastic, but his enthusiasm is the limit of enthusiasm in one sense, because it's such an emotional response that it has bodily symptoms. And Ugrasena it tells him to, you know, yes, he should go. Very interesting, too. He appreciates that he has Krishna's order, Ugrasena, because he's the king. You know, so when you're a servant, you want the order. You really want that order, that instruction. That becomes your life. Prabhupada, that was his life, wasn't it? Prabhupada always comments that the inspiration for him to go to the West and spread Krishna consciousness is when he was reading Vishwanath Chakravarti's commentary on the verse of Visayatmika Buddhi Ekeha Kuru Nandana. that one should be one pointed in devotional service, not splayed. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said that that means to take the order of the spiritual master as one's life and soul. Because love means to fulfill another person's desire. And that desire for above may come from some instruction or order. So having that order, having that instruction, one is very happy because he has the heart, because it's the other person's desire. I want you to do this. So you have the heart. It energizes one's love and devotion. But in contrast, he says, I have the degrading occupation of ruling the kingdom. So again, the consciousness of the devotee, what an ordinary person may aspire for, the devotee will shun. It's not supposition, but he shuns being put in a position where ruling. He shuns being put in a position where he's surrounded by the accoutrements of power, the accoutrements of being in the center. So now we'll go to where we are today. So now Narada has come. After hearing Ugrasena's advice, he becomes absorbed in this exalted state, total exhaustion in maha praying. It's just, and that's what praying means. The more the love, the more the absorption. And prema is the limit of absorption. In fact, that's our practice. Our practice is becoming absorbed in Krishna, which will bring out our natural attraction. But when that natural attraction heightens to the highest degree, that's all there is Krishna. He's absorbed in this, and therefore he becomes controlled by this. This prema, it controls the devotee. And therefore, a devotee, actually, who has that prema, that love of Krishna, very, very powerful. And sometimes the nature, prema does mean that there's such absorption, there's a tendency to forget oneself. Many, many verses describe that in the Bhagavatam, at the higher stages of devotion, there's a forgetfulness of oneself, what to speak of one's surroundings. I was describing from the Yoga Sutras when they describe prema, now they describe samadhi, the highest level of absorption is one forgets oneself. So forgetting everything else, vismrita, forgetting akila, complete everything, forgetting everything else, he starts off vina in hand. Having spent much time before in Dwarka, Narada automatically took the familiar roads to the center of the city. Amazing roads that led to the neighborhood of the Lord's palace and came to a palace of Krishna's that he knew how to reach from earlier visits. Under the spell of intense transcendental agitation, Narada seemed like an ordinary person haunted by a ghost. Uddhava is described in the same way, that it looked like a mental imbalance. The ecstasy was so high. His absorption was so deep. And therefore, there's a lack of cognizance and consideration of how you look. It's just not in your mind. That's not your concern. So you lose social consideration, and therefore the vision of such a person can easily be misunderstood. The essence of the Bhagavatam is explained by Ishvara Puri, Krishna's guru. Ishvara Puri, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's guru, he gave him that verse, evam vrita supriyanama krita, in this way meant without attachment, without inhibition. And I see that too in kirtan. I could see it myself there. I mean, it was really a nice experience. I mean, for the first 3 hours, I was sitting up basically just straight and hearing the kirtan and praying to the different spiritual guardians, Srila Prabhupada, Bhakti Siddhanta, remembering the different places in Vrindavan that are inspiration. But still, you know, there's some slight consideration, you know, some image or something that you are being watched and how should I act? There's some slight thing, naturally, from our nature, our samskaras, etc. But, you know, when the kirtan goes, that goes too, to some extent. it was really, So in this purport here, it describes that, okay, you know, he knew it before, so he got there. But another thing was mentioned, that the truth, the real thing is that when you're under the pure love of Godhead, you're conducted helplessly. So although you've given up that consideration, which therefore technically should hinder or impede or obstruct your ability to function. Under the control of God, everything is understood perfectly. And you move in the right way for the ultimate objective, love of God. So what is speaking of coming to Krishna's palace. So it's a nice concept of surrendering under the sway of love, losing one's external consideration, but having confidence to be directed by Krishna in a way that everything's accommodated. Even Krishna himself is controlled by intense love. And that love becomes his director. And therefore he ceases to become the karana or the cause. Love is the cause of how Krishna moves. And it's described in a very interesting way in the Rasa dance when Krishna just becomes completely absorbed in that love and devotion, the dancing and the singing, everything that expresses that love and the gestures. And he's with the people he loves most. He's with the people he loves most for the whole night, opening his heart fully in dance and singing. That's what we all hanker for in a pure way. And it says that generally one, again, the consideration, one acts for pleasure. A sane person, he acts for pleasure. So he is superior to the pleasure because he's the karanam of the cause. When someone becomes drunk, out of pleasure, he acts. So the pleasure becomes the karanam. And the person is that which is acted upon. So Krishna himself surrenders to that. Text 4. Bhumo kvapi skalati patati kvapi tishtatya cheshtisa kvap yukampam pajati lutati kvapi rojitarta kvap yak kroshan pitibhya ayate gayati kvapi nityam sarvam kvapi shriyati yugapati Premasampadvikaran. He sometimes tripped and fell to the ground and sometimes stood motionless. Sometimes his body trembled or he rolled on the ground or he wept in great distress. He sometimes shouted and jumped about, sometimes sang and danced. And sometimes all the transformation of priceless love of God converged in him at once. Commentary, the full manifestations of devotional ecstasy appeared in Narada's body as trembling, perspiration, standing of the bodily hairs on end, and loud crying. Only devotees advanced in prayer feel the ecstasies that externally show as these symptoms. I don't know if that'd be good, because the symptoms could be fake, but these symptoms are out of pure love. And in Rasa Shastra, the science of love, in Rasa Shastra, the science of love, these are the symptoms. And there it's saying they converged at once. And the higher stages of love, you know, there's many symptoms, and they converge at once to bring the heart to higher and higher stages of love. Text 5. Hey man matir idanam tvam savadana tarabhava stiratam papayanti mam sadaryam shrinvitam svayam. My dear mother, please now be fully attentive. Listen so soberly with steady concentration to what I am about to say. So, Marge Prickett, because again, he's the last minutes of his life practically, and he's summing up what he heard from his guru, Sukadeva Goswami, his mother, who is certainly one of the greatest devotees. So this is a good teacher. He knows that he has a short time to speak, and what he has to speak is very deep, very, very esoteric, and one has to listen very, very carefully, because what he's going to do, he's going to explain the subject. At the same time he's going to explain the subject, he's going to couch it in a frame of reference according to his mother's understanding, so she'll hear it purely. That's what Prabhupada did. He spoke Krishna book, but he knew that people had no frame of reference to understand the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. So he couched it in different commentaries and statements so carefully so people would miss it. But if you're inattentive, you'll miss a point, and then you'll hear something in another way. I've had that so many times. You know, you speak something and people understand it according to their frame of reference, and therefore misunderstanding what you're saying. Or on the other side, I'm speaking so often that I may not say something clearly, and it may therefore create a misimpression. So it's always incumbent. That's why there's dialectic. People bring up their doubts and further explanation. And he says, really listen attentively. And he's also saying it to the audience, because what's going to come up is really powerful things. Is going to describe the heart of Krishna in separation from the resonance of Vrindavan while he's in Dwarka. commentary, Prakshit Maharaj wants his mother to listen carefully so that the Supreme Lord's pastimes he's about to describe will enchant her mind and awaken her ecstatic love. Prakshit knows from his own experience that the insanity of love for Krishna is in fact the most natural condition of the soul, and that devotees infected with this insanity are more sober and in touch with reality than anything else. Wow. That the insanity of love is the most natural condition. So the insanity is it doesn't move according to social expectations, but it's the natural, the nature of the soul is not bound to social expectations. Overwhelming love is not bound to social explanations. What if someone experienced great love, you know, and somehow they're walking on Fifth Avenue and somehow or other they became overwhelmed with intense love and broke down crying hysterically. So that's the natural condition of the soul to love Krishna. But there could be a misunderstanding of that. So listen, they said, listen carefully to this. Listen soberly, but they're saying, what is soberly? Soberly may mean you may cry hysterically. You may be like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and say, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came back after from Gaya, after being initiated by Ishvara Puri, he was in a super ecstatic state, but he was in a mood of separation from God, which is a natural condition, and it was to the deepest extent. So people thought he was a madman. His students thought he was a madman. So sometimes deep emotions, which are beautiful, may be misunderstood in the presence of people with no frame of reference for that. That day, Lord Krishna was, for some reason, disturbed in mind and asleep in the inner quarters. And Uddhava had left him and sat down nearby on a terrace at the edge of the palace. There, Uddhava was joined by Baladev, Devaki, and Rohini, and queens of Krishna like Rukmini and Satyabhama, as well as various maidservants and other ladies, including Krishna's mother, Kamsa's mother, Padmavati, a lady who had the habit of making public gossip out of Krishna's personal affairs. Wow. What if they were all on Facebook? My God. Okay. Mooney, do you have any questions? If you're there.
I do, Maharaj. Thanks. Earlier you were talking about enthusiasm. And you're using Narada's example. And you said something kind of remarkable. You said, our enthusiasm is our bhakti, I think, is the way you put it. And I had a question about it. And forgive me if it takes a minute to get the question out. As I was listening to it, it struck me that I was just reflecting on my life and the lives of many of my closest devotee friends who are my age or probably in our early to mid-30s. And we had first joined the ashrams when we were 18 or 20, 22 or something. And that I was thinking that if I had to describe my current state, it would not be enthusiastic. I think you might find gratitude, or you might find a sense of a desire to do one's dharma, or a desire to try to achieve the truth or live according to God's will or something. But I'm wondering, you know, certainly there's a concern, you know, where that, you know, we can like look back to our early lives and, you know, there's a sense, I remember, you know, rushing to finish taking a shower to make it to Mangalarti because I just wanted to hear Guru Vashtika, you know, and sing it. And certainly that kind of spontaneous feeling is not very prevalent in my experience anymore. And I'm wondering, there's stories you could tell for why one is not particularly enthusiastic. I think one of them is maybe a general disappointment with the expectations one had for one's own spiritual community or oneself. And also things like getting older, having responsibilities, whatever. But sometimes people look back to their early enthusiasm and it's almost like everybody says your first couple of years as a religious convert are going to be the most intense. And then you have to kind of just learn to, it's like a marriage. You're not always going to feel the early life of being in love, but you can find a deeper kind of stable love. So I'm wondering, I don't know, I'm trying to understand enthusiasm in the midst of all of these kind of considerations.
I like this. This is, go ahead.
Yeah, so what would your advice be? I mean, certainly it could just be on the part of people, like in my kind of situation, just some kind of spiritual problem, or maybe it's just a sign of aging in a certain way. I don't know. And what advice would you
have? There's a lot of ways you can deal with it. I think so many things came to my mind and so many things left my mind at the same time. I had like five or six answers. I should have had a pen. But maybe when I talk they'll come out. Anyway, first, enthusiasm, I don't necessarily, first of all, mean, you know, it has to be like some real visible, you know, wild running here and there, you know, because that easily can be mixed with passion and other things. It's like, but, you know, the general, you're attracted to devotional service, you know, it's something that enlivens you. Obviously, that's a symptom of devotion. You know, what do you mean? You're enthusiastic to chant. I mean, I feel like one sense, look at the people that like to listen to this class. You know what I'm saying? I mean, and then people who should and don't, you know, it's an enthusiasm to hear. Right? I mean, that's a good symptom. So obviously there's some type of correlation between that, you know, and obviously it can wane and it can increase. It can wane by offenses, you know, it can increase by devotion. You know, so there's also factors like that. There's also factors of an initial experience, religious experience that God may give to attract us to it. There's also the factors, Bori Jeff once told, he said, you know, we're all pure until we got a taste for power, you know. You know, once the hierarchical, the corporate thing spread in, the socialized the thing, you know, different things became set in also there. Now the point about like, you know, I guess, falling in love, you know, like an early romance and then kind of settling down, bhakti should increase, enthusiasm should increase, how it's expressed, you know, that may differ. And we also deal with different karmic tests. I mean, let's say I was in India. I'm really enthusiastic at chanting. I remember when I first got malaria, I'm on my back. I can't chant. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
you know, am I not no longer devotional or something like that? So I think we go through different periods, you know, sometimes we have certain tests. So it's not like, you know, there's a basic enthusiasm is faith, our trust, you know. So I think there's a basic foundation of it. And then, you know, it sometimes recedes, it sometimes becomes stronger. We're sometimes put in situations where it appears that we can't serve as much. So I say, although we don't expect the, it's one of the, I mean, in the Upadeshamrita, it's one of the, isn't it one of the symptoms of, you know, things that are favorable for bhakti, like utsahan daryat nishtyat, you know? The first thing is utsahan. We should look at that purport, what it means. So I think the solution to this is, to this kind of thing, is kind of, first of all, getting deeper into what the concept is, you know what I'm saying? Then, then leaving the concept up in some kind of, you know, kind of some physical manifestation of running around, you know, and then trying to separate it from the situations that apparently were more conducive, you know, when you were unencumbered in ways, you know. I mean, the reason a person gets married is actually to become more enthusiastic for Krishna consciousness in one sense. If that person, if that person, another, more enthusiastic than the person would have been, like remaining in the brahmacharya ashram full of material desires, you know, the enthusiasm would go down after a while, you know, even externally, you know. So I guess your question is how do you look at that enthusiasm now? I think it's multifaceted, you know. I think there, you know, each individual, it may be a different thing, you know. It may be, one thing it could be too is, you know, some bad experiences sometimes, you know, put negative concepts in terms of our devotional life, you know, because it was mixed with negative things and our enthusiasm is dampened by the attraction we have, but there's also other attractions we have, bad experiences. It could just be a karmic period where we have other challenges and other lessons to learn. But I would say, you know, the core bhakti, you know, even if it can't be accessed, there's a certain faith that's there. I've seen that. I mean, even with, I give you an example, even, anyway, I don't think it's embarrassing to him. You know, Narottam, you know, he was in ashrams, and then, you know, and then well, a little time, and then outside, he was always enthusiastic for devotional service, and then, you know, certain challenges came up, and some were institutional things that the person may have difficulty with. But what I saw is that somehow or other, you know, there's something core and base. And therefore, you know, when he was in the class and, you know, they were speaking in personalism, you know, he felt that this wasn't the right thing or something. So, all right, Mooney, I think you have to ask further questions to get to the essence
No, it's been great so far. I just, you know, I was thinking, as you were speaking, William Blake has a series of poems that are contrasting. One, I think it's called Songs of Innocence, and the other is called Songs of Experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I think about the kind of enthusiasm that often is considered being fired up or whatever in the devotee community, I think in my case it was mostly innocence. And there's I think I often mistook enthusiasm for what is called utsaha mayi, or kind of like a kind of naive eagerness where you maybe aren't so familiar with your own kind of parameters, or maybe, you know, it's like a young person thinks they can take over, they can conquer the world, and there's something very nice about that, but there's also something very naive about that. And so I'm wondering if part of what I'm finding when I kind of am trying to figure out enthusiasm is definitely I feel like I'm definitely not naive anymore, but there's a danger that you can become a bit jaded when you reflect on the kind of excesses of the past. And so a week ago or so, I forwarded you what I thought was a really kind of ludicrous public preaching display that I thought was crazy. And one response you had is, this is going to be bad for some devotees because it's just going to reinforce their negative samskaras. And the funny thing is, you had mentioned that. And then, of course, the friend who had sent it to me, it initiated an email exchange of kind of jaded New Jersey style, you know, ironic criticisms of the movement, you know. So you were right, you predicted that. And so I guess the point, part of it seems to be, how do you really become genuinely experienced where, I do know the faults of the community that I've been, that I'm either in or that I've been influenced by. I do know historical challenges, blah, 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 but there's enthusiasm, but I still have that core enthusiasm. So how do, you know, you're not innocent anymore, but you're still enthusiastic. I don't know. Somehow that came to my mind as a way of framing maybe how I reflect on my own experience. Does that make sense, or is it?
It does. It does. And I saw two things. One, saying that, I was also feeling there was, you know, a circumstance or situation where legitimately it facilitated more devotion in a way beyond all the everything else, you know, you know, the whole program and everything else. It was exciting. By the way, I just mentioned that Lakshmi led Kirtan yesterday, and it was fantastic. You know, and the way he did it, you know, because they had a little stage in front of the temple. I'm going to get back this little stage in front of the deities. But, you know, he just took the mic and went into the audience, you know, and sang in the middle of the audience as the backup was going. And he was just so expertly done. It was so I appreciated it so much. He just had this faith in the holy name, and he was so expert in just building the thing that eventually everyone was dancing. But what I wanted to say is that, you know, we have to, I'm going to give this song, and I was talking to you about it. These means people are not necessarily, they're not even devotees, actually, but they want to deepen their self and spiritual life. They heard me speak, and they're inviting me to their house. And these are people really established in the world. And I really like this program because, you know, you go to a place and you lecture, but now they want satsang. And they really want the spiritual life, you know, how do you, it's the same, it's like they're asking this question, but everyone's asking it, you know, how do you execute spiritual life practically in the world, you know? And, you know, the first thing I was going to talk about, there's many things, is I wanted to talk about major choices. You know, first you have to analyze your major choices, you know, what you can do in your environment, what you can do in your practices, you know. Not only that, when I'm saying environment, I'm just saying is there's always a decision, how can I get a better environment for Krishna consciousness? You know, sometimes we just separate it from that. Sometimes you have to create it ourselves. Sometimes you have to travel for it, you know, or whatever the case is. But I was just seeing that, you know, I was at that bhakti center, and people were visiting me, you know, and one thing I saw was so nice, there's 15 monks there, right? And one thing I saw, you know, is, and this is in contrast perhaps to the, I would say, basic misunderstanding of spiritual life, that advancement in spiritual life is renunciation rather than dedication. So at the beginning of the movement, that led to say kind of like a little bit tinge of anti-women and things like that, you know? So it was so nice. I saw that, you know, Kunji Kishore kind of does a lot of my, I guess, like secretary work. So during our lunch hour, she came to visit me, right? And, you know, just the way that the monks treated her, you know, it was like, it wasn't that she was a woman. She was a person, you know? There wasn't, just sat her down, sat her down with them, fed her, made sure she had prasadam. It's just so nice in that sense. And I even saw there's a lady that lives in the building and she comes to the program. She's not really a devotee, but she comes because they rent out rooms, when she's in the temple. It's, facilities and how you... What I'm just saying is I want to say that point about the negativity, the things that sometimes come when you're trying to establish things, how they turn people off and how when they're done properly, people's enthusiasm just, Kishore was just said, I said, whenever I come, come and join me for lunch, whenever I'm in the city there, she was so enthusiastic. So I agree with you too, that, the environment can so negatively impact one, in enthusiasm, because then the impression comes. It's, when you're mistreating a situation, then the impression is like something you should be enthusiastic about, which is like devotees, that has this negative connotation, fanatics and things. Mm-hmm. So then something that you should be enthusiastic or you were enthusiastic with at the beginning for good reasons, because devotees are nice, devotees are fixed in Krishna God, they follow principle, then comes, impressions like that. So either we have to look at things maturely and make sure we should be on the thoughtful platform, which we always need to do within the world, because everything's going to be mixed. But at the same time, it's also good to see what are those places and who are those people which can reinforce the philosophy, that represent the ideals we hold, so that we get a better impulsive reaction to some of the things that should cause enthusiasm. Do you understand?
So if I understand what you're saying is we should use our intelligence to associate with those features of our religious community that do represent the ideals and inspire us. Because if we tend to associate our religious culture with all the kind of weirdness and negative things and, all the things that you and I have talked about in private and other things like that, well, then what does that do? That'll just reinforce this negative impulsive samskara. So we use our intelligence to associate with
those. And the additional point that, because the world is just what it is, in a way, and, perfection is really hard. I mean, even when I was in that kirtan, which was so good, and everything was so good, because of the way my mind works, which is also similar to your mind works, it's so critical, not in a bad way, but how things should be done better to, just to, have a realistic vision of ourselves, and try to be on the mindful, proper platform, And I know people who were jaded, and now are so mature. Who just went through it, and it just became determined, to grasp the essence and not be distracted by anything else and not be too overreactive. I don't want to mention the person, but there's one person I was thinking in particular.
Okay. Well, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And thank you. It was really encouraging. There are okay. Other things that it kind of brought up, but you've given me a lot of time now and
I think it's good. I think people do like this and do appreciate this part. So because of this medium, it is a difficult medium, one lecturing and one not seeing the people. So I think it's okay. I'm also going to another program today. Because I really like this idea that some very nice people I met in India, who just became very enthusiastic from coming to India about things, and they're inviting me to meet their friends in their house in Brooklyn, And I really like this type of thing of meeting people in that atmosphere. Go ahead. But I have time. I don't have to leave for another hour. Go ahead.
Well, the only other thing I was going to ask is,
yeah.
I think that in one sense, you know, we sometimes use the metaphor of a razor's edge that I think comes from the Upanishads.
Yeah.
And one thing it seems to me is that the way in which we
came from that Straight Edge magazine. Okay.
sometimes it seems to me that the way we engage with our ritual culture could be like a razor's edge, because sometimes it seems like you could just get caught into a kind of habit and it becomes kind of dreary, but you figure it's your duty and you do it and you kind of get your way through it and then you go on to other things.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
especially as Americans, we tend not to be very ritually oriented.
Yeah.
So do you think, Marge, that part of our challenge is that we are kind of in our sadhana, we are re-engaging in a ritual culture in one sense, and we have to find a way to use that ritual to find the essence and to kind of make it a spontaneous, lively, powerful affair, not just a kind of soul-crushing monotony. I don't know, because I think sometimes I've heard devotees
say soul-crushing monotony. That's beautiful.
Well, thank you. It's beautifully depressing. Yeah.
We have to be very careful. I mean, there's two things. One, it is the spontaneity. There's the spontaneity, and that's the bhakti. And the other thing is, there's the discipline. You know, that, unless we have some rules, right, then we won't remain fixed. So in our tradition, it's, keep some structure, some obligations, some ritual, but you really have to consciously keep the objective. You know, it's just like, chanting Gayatri Mantra, for example. You know, it's just always, but think, you can meditate. You know, it recommends like that, meditate. You know, okay, there's Krishna. He's under the tree. He's blowing his flute, There's ways to just keep the thing active. You know, even like I said, even during the kirtan, which is nice, I'm hearing the name. But I see how helpful it is because I'm going to be sitting there for 12 hours, how helpful it is to, make sure it doesn't just become a broken record in one sense, or not that the holy name is like that. I mean, get absorbed and you just get absorbed in the name. But while you're doing that, how helpful it was to offer prayers, how helpful it was to remember Vrindavan. And I was really surprised because I did this for the first couple of hours. And of course, the change in the kirtans and some unusual people coming in, it occupies your mind in other ways. But I really think that's important. Papa called it the mental culture of Krishna consciousness. And he even said when children eat, I think he even said they can eat like cow. He said when you eat, and he said, this is another thing. He said when you eat, you can think of Krishna the cowherd boys. I think a mental culture is important. And but I'll just tell you one thing about I don't know if this came to my mind, but it was Purujan Prabhu. Right, for his health, he studied Tai Chi, and he also lived in China for some time. So he showed me this video of him practicing Tai Chi, and there was at least 200 people, maybe 20 lines across and 10 deep each line, and the teacher doing the Tai Chi, right? And the film, scans over the people, right? Doing the Tai Chi, and when it gets to Purujan, he's in his dhoti among everyone else doing the Tai Chi. I said, Purujan, why are you wearing your dhoti? He said, hey, that's what I wear. It's my habit now. Anyway, I don't know why that struck me.
Was that,
Forget it. Let's not even discuss it. But I just appreciate it. It was the other end, you know. But that's what his dress was now. I mean, you got to pick some dress. That's what he dresses like. Anyway, it worked. Okay, let's not get into that. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mark.
Okay. With that, I kind of have to. Gail, do you have any question?
No, Maharaj. Thank you for asking.
Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Please accept my humble obeisances.
I'm here. Great. It was nice to see you in Jayati at the Kirtan. Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Shastra, I know. I saw Krishna Kirtan at the Kirtan. He just came from Rehoboth. Yeah. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hi Krishna Maharaj, this is Janava.
Hi Krishna. Janava, you would have really loved to be there yesterday. It was so nice just seeing all these people. You know, I'd never seen that before because there's a 12-hour function and so many people just coming in all day long. It was great. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Haribol Maharaj.
Who's this?
Chaitanya Priya.
Who?
Chaitanya Priya.
Oh, Chaitanya Priya. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you.
Very well.
You would have appreciated too, because you've lived there. Okay.
I've missed the first few minutes of the class today. What are you referring to?
There's a 12-hour kirtan every month in the Bhakti Center. They have a 12-hour kirtan. It's really great. So I'm just saying, because I know you from New York, and now you're not there. I said we would have appreciated being there and seeing that. You know, because usually when you were in New York, you know, it was the same congregation that came every month, basically, you know, and a few new people. But this 12-hour kirtan, it just constantly streams of new people just coming in, you know. Okay. It was a wonderful thing. Okay, thank you. Okay,
thank you.
Anybody else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Surit and Hanan here.
Oh, great. Okay, thank you. I saw you for so many years at that program at Jonathan's house. Okay. Thank you.
Nice to hear from you. Yesterday on the... I also saw you yesterday on the 12 hours. I saw that online. Some of it I saw.
Oh, you went online?
Yeah.
Yeah. There was only one shot of me, I know, because where I was sitting was right behind the camera. So I guess once they just probably turned it around.
Yeah.
Oh, great. You watched it online. Yeah, anybody who wants to watch those, they're on gauravani.com. You can watch the whole thing. It's not exactly like being there, but it's also exciting. Yeah. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello? And you can still go on gauravani.com and probably get most of it, but try to get the end part with Ananta and Achyuta and those. And Raghunath led Kirtan, and he has simple melodies, and he's an entertainer, but he really got the audience. He had like a half-hour slot someplace, but he told this hilarious story. Oh, when he was in India, and he gave a very nice analogy, because he's trying to explain to the audience why I sent him from Vrindavan. I helped him because he was staying in Vrindavan with me for some time when he first came to India. And he described Vrindavan like a paradise for surfers, where there are like huge waves and you can just ride the waves. It's kind of like ride the waves of nectar. But at the same time, after a while, you better be careful because, you know, those waves, the same waves that give you nectar sometimes are difficult to handle. So he told him, I sent him to Calcutta because I knew there was some things there that would be really enlivening to him. Anyway, I can't tell the story, but it was interesting. Okay, I guess I'll just I'll have to go because something else. But thank you all for coming on the class today. Lunch or coffee?